say this is the petition we've received. Obviously, I've indicated we'll take it very seriously. It's all about caring for animals. Obviously, they want our laws to be implemented much harsher than they are and much more effectively. And they want more budgets to look after the animals as well. So I think it's wonderful that our children are already at this age learning how to be active citizens in their democracy. And we as a committee will take this seriously and also convey to the minister the views of these children. As you can see, it's just a lovely initiative. Weather services and thereafter the Disaster Management Center are really important in this whole plan, because they are really the institutions that have to respond to where things have gone wrong. So as climate changes are getting more unpredictable, worse and so on, obviously these are our rapid response to try and make sure that we minimize the kind of damage and trying to deal with the issues. So it's an unfortunate part of what we have to look at, but a necessary part of what we have to look at. Are you here from the weather services?
Yes, sir.
Over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
But so the input looks like this, sir. I hope you've all got it. Okay.
Good afternoon, honorable members. So my presentation will talk to the strategic drivers and programs that we have sourced that are related to the white paper, then the forecasting, early warning, advisory services together, and then climate change related initiatives, and then I will conclude. Just to indicate the link to the white paper, most specifically to Chapter 4 for the start, which identified the following as among the strategic priorities: risk reduction and management, informed decision making, and planning. So these are all related to alerts or early warning system. And then in Chapter 5, we're also required in the white paper to address the adaptation, and then it is where the early warning and forecasting for disaster risk reduction are to be addressed. So, Honorable Chair, we don't wait for things to be wrong, but proactively we have to predict what is going to happen in the future. The Weather Service strategic drivers and the programs related to the early warnings and also climate change, I will just want to highlight the two strategic drivers that are in our strategy, the safety of life and property, which we have the operational early warning system, and also which we enforce an integrated approach working with partners. And then the second strategic driver is provision of scientific information for adaptation and mitigation to climate change, adapting to the impacts of climate change and vulnerability on food sustainability, rural development, and quality of life of South Africans. That's where we're going to focus on. Again, also to build on the experience of air quality and Global Atmospheric Watch. Global Atmospheric Watch Station is here in Cape Point. And also to establish, we have also established the 7 strategic programs. And then I've just taken the first one there of the 7 strategic programs, which is Climate Change and Variability Program. Here we are going to be addressing or supporting the National Climate Change Adaptation and Mitigation Initiative. Highlighting on the forecasting, we're forecasting and then we issue forecasting using these 3 categories. You've got your nowcasting, your short and medium term range, your long range forecasting, which I'm going to explain in detail. So the nowcasting, which is 0 to 12 hours, I think, honorable members, in your copies is saying 0 to 14 hours. I must apologize, that is an error. It's supposed to be 0 to 12 hours. We offer weather forecast. forecasts and advices on weather phenomena that occurred on time scales from 0 to 24 hours. These ones are your severe thunderstorms, your hail, your lightning, tornadoes, etc. What is important here is that the lead time is quite short, so then the integrated approach is very important. Together with other partners, the National Disaster Management Center and also the local disaster management authorities, we are trying to enforce a functionality of disaster management plans at local level. At the moment, we do have a disaster management plan, but at the local level where they have to be more active, they are still not as functional as required in some areas. Because if the lead time is short, then when the communities are warned, the people need to know what to do exactly, where they should go, so that they don't end up causing a disaster instead of avoiding a disaster. In terms of the short and medium range, which is 1 to 3 days, and then it can also go to 10 days. Our approach is ensemble prediction system. So this is very important so that you can manage the expectations of the users that are using the information. They need to understand that a forecast is not a yes or no. It's a probabilistic. So if you say 80%, it's a chance of it occurring. So the ensemble prediction system is using a number of numerical weather prediction models, and then to check the uncertainty level as well. How certain are you? So hence you will get your 30%, your 80%. Honorable members, then it becomes even more important to educate the people that will be using the early warning information, the forecast information. Because if they don't interpret it correctly, then they won't be able to use it to their benefit. And then we've got a long-range forecast, which is more for agricultural applications. It's also a probabilistic forecast. You've got your 11 to 30 days and 1 to 3 months. And then in terms of a longer time scale, up to decades, this is at the development phase. So we are working on this because we also have limited skills, not only in South Africa for this time scale, but globally. So we have started now to develop those expertise for South Africa. Honorable members, I would like you to look closely to this focus map. I've said let's use this opportunity to also predict so that when we come next time, you can check how close was the focus to what is happening. If you look at your left-hand side, it's a rainfall prediction for August, September, October. So your near above normal rainfall is more or less over the southeastern part, the blue part. But I would like to emphasize the one in the middle, which is showing a below normal rainfall that has been predicted. So if then you've got a below normal for a longer time scale in some areas that have got water stress already, it could be challenging. In some areas that have been experiencing drought already, it could be challenging. So you can see it's more biased for the south western part, and then you've got a white area over the central part. So it looks like the probability is more biased to below normal rainfall as you go to the spring.
So the whole issue of getting drier in the west and wetter in the east is reflected in your predictions?
Yes, Honorable Chair, it looks like it is reflected. And then again, the white paper, Honorable Members, points to the use of early warning system to give timely warning of adverse weather as part of adaptation to climate change and variability impact. And then it also encourages investment in education and awareness programs. This is very important. I've listened to the previous speakers. They also alluded to a need for the integrated approach in terms of education or awareness programs. That's why, Honorable Members, we have started a national roadshow. We are calling upon partners National Disaster Management Center have been also joining us, and then we have managed to talk to local municipalities in those areas that we have visited already, so that people, they understand these products, then they can adapt to this impact. It's not enough to just have a warning system if the people cannot interpret the information correctly. This is the kind of severe weather warning system that you are seeing there. It is a subset of MHEWS that you see there, which means multi-hazard early warning system. So the severe weather warning system, which we abbreviate as SWWS, is a subset of the multi-hazard early warning system, which is coordinated by the National Disaster Management Center. So if you look at the northeastern side of this presentation, you've got your weather service, your input, processing the information. What is important is that the information gets disseminated. It's where the Disaster Management Center gets the priority to get information so that they can plan, they can get a better lead time. We have actually had some workshops just to make sure that we got a better understanding. There is information that you cannot send it immediately to the public because it might cause panic. But the disaster management authorities, they understand better how to interpret the information so that they get the information as their priority. And then the media is used as a means of disseminating information. We are currently on establishing an MOU with SABC where we want to use more especially the radios that can communicate information in various languages, and also to use the media to educate the public. Then the information must reach the community that it reaches in time, and then when it reaches them, it has to be interpreted correctly. After that interpretation, it has the appropriate action have to be taken. But honorable members, it is important that the communities must also give feedback both to the disaster management authorities and also to the South African Weather Service, because we've got communication structures that can use to give even more detail. A tornado, for example, we cannot see if it has occurred. We could see through the radar that there was a potential of a tornado over that particular area. Then if we get a feedback to the community, we can be able to inform that local community the timing and the exact direction of that tornado. And in enhancing the early warning system, we have based on international best practices, but what is important, from October 2010, we brought in a color coding. We have also realized that the warnings that were issuing are so many, and then they don't give a meaning. And then we developed alert categories, advisory, watch, and a warning. This slide is explaining those categories, and if it's yellow, then it's an advisor. What is important there, you have to be aware there's a potential hazard. And then if it's orange, be prepared. You could be required to take an action. So that means now the confidence of the forecaster is increasing. Then if it is red, you are required to take action. So those are the categories, categories are very important because they also reduce the false alarm rate, so that people can understand that if they are required to take action, they take action. This one is just showing the climate change and vulnerability research. What is important here is that we collaborate with other stakeholders or research institutions so that we can check what is the impact in South Africa, and also which areas are more climate sensitive or which sectors are also climate sensitive. And then we identify those, so that means we're at the beginning stage so that we can come up with appropriate action. Here, the Weather Service is also involved with the international related bodies like your IPCC. You can see you've got a working group one, for example, that investigates how the intensity and frequency of climate extremes such as your drought, your flood. My colleague talked about the coastal storms, how do they increase with time, which areas are affected in the world. You can see those countries that are listed there, they are all affected. That means this is a worldwide activity. then the future plans is to develop a climate change impact modeling capability to support the development of applications that will inform adaptation efforts and strategies on biannual and on decadal time scales. As I indicated, we've got a limited skills in this area globally, but we are working on it. We have also got a new role in terms of the air quality. So we are busy now with the air quality modeling and forecasting. I'm using that picture on your right-hand side, which is a Europe picture, because we are using the UK Met Office model, which is called a NEMO model, which is also going to assist us to be able to do a quality forecasting. The picture you see there is for Europe, the forecasting of the nitrogen dioxide. So we would like to produce a forecast like this in South Africa as well. The initiatives is the roadshows that I've mentioned, honorable members, to raise awareness, to go to the local communities, and then work together closely with the disaster management authorities and encourage a development of disaster management plan that is integrated, that is also understood by the local communities. We also develop new warning system, just to highlight, because this is our first presentation in trying to service the white paper, the South African flash flood guidance system, which is radar based, and then the Southern African regional flash flood guidance system. That one is satellite based and coordinated by the World Meteorological Organization, and it has proven that it is working well. We've seen it during the recent tropical cyclone Irina, which affected KwaZulu-Natal. The storm surge warning system, which we developed with the Ocean and Coast of the Department of Environmental Affairs and other stakeholders, my colleagues did mention it. And then the National Fire Danger Rating System to service the National Fire Danger Act, which we work with the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. And then the Tsunami Warning System, we are the means of disseminating tsunami warning in South Africa. We don't issue the tsunami warning, but because of the communication structure and also in line with the practices that are performed by other meteorological services, we do disseminate tsunami warning messages. And then the community rainfall station is in-house developed community rainfall station. You use your cell phone, you configure it. So you can maybe have the bucket in your yard, then it's linked into your house. So you configure it. Maybe in discussion with the local disaster management authorities, you know that if you reach 25 millimeters, it becomes a problem in your area. Then you can configure it so that every 10 millimeters, for example, it sends a message and it will tell you 10, 20, 30, or every 5 millimeters. So the user decides how to configure it, but it's always important to discuss with your local disaster management authorities so that you can have an information about also whether you are in a slope or whether this area is also a flood prone. And then the expansion of the severe weather forecasting demonstration project, which started in 2006 to the whole of the SADC region, and also to enhance its activities in terms of giving severe weather guidance products to the SADC. My last slide, Honorable Chair, is just to highlight the successes and challenges. We managed to develop a sophisticated hazard monitoring system, and they compare very well with international best practices. Relationship with forecasters and disaster management authorities are actually significant, but we would like now to make sure that it's all over South Africa, it's not in certain areas. Effective dissemination of warning to all levels of society are still a challenge, and we need support and participation with other structures, including your disaster management authorities, the government departments, the media, and other role players. So this is where now the message needs to reach the community at risk in time, but then when it reaches them, they must have been educated to interpret it correctly so that they can take appropriate action. So that's why we've got this public awareness around the early warning system that we've also been lucky from late last year for the Deputy Minister of the Department. these areas for this public awareness. I thank you very much.
Thank you. The new colors you've got, are you going to do that the same as the electricity?
You mean in terms of the television?
The warning on the television.
Yes, that is the route, Honorable Chair, we would like to take. We have negotiated with the ETV, so they've already started to show it there. And then the SABC, they are currently in the process of installing new systems that will be able to have those capabilities. Their timeline is that that system should be in place by November this year.
That thing really changes behavior. It's very important. In my house, we scurry when we see that sign. We run. Okay. Comments, questions? Seems quite straightforward. Everyone happy? Mr. Matebe?
There are other stakeholders involved in this process. How do you liaise with them? Because they must say, this is what we are expecting, this is what we are seeing. But that might be different from what we have detected. So how do you make sure that different stakeholders which are involved in this particular process are being brought together to make sure that the message that we send to the public is one and accurate?
Anyone else? Chief?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Honorable, I would like to answer this using the hazardous weather activity. The recent example is the tropical cyclone Irina over KZN that we experienced late, I think in February, into March. Then what we do, either we'll have a presentation where the disaster management center is going to organize other role players like your defense force, like your Department of Health, and all the other stakeholders that need to be involved when we have got hazard. So then we share, we assess the level of threat, then a decision is made whether to form what we call a national joint centers and the provincial joint centers, which has happened during that tropical cyclone Irina. Then you've got your meetings, as you asked, some are ad hoc, some are scheduled, then where a meteorological expert will present the status. In KZN, for example, the MEC was attending those meetings. And I think if those structures were not in place, we could have seen more people dying in KZN, because the rate of rainfall that was falling per hour was exceeding the usually experienced rainfall over 24 hours. So the water there was accumulating very frequently. So that's how we do it, Honorable Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. I see that Ms. Beaumont isn't here. She said she's going to be somewhere. I think what, you know, it worries me is that these important inputs, this one and the next one that's coming, isn't part of your input you gave us earlier. And that document, just like we said, there are other things missing in that document, needs to also be updated, that these kind of issues around warnings, around how we act in disasters, is part of that. I'm not sure under which part it falls. But at the moment, you guys, it's not part of your document that you reported to us. So I don't want to make sure that it is part of it, so that it also is part of that implementation plan, you said. Because clearly there are things here that need to
panel members. My name is Ken Terry. I head the National Disaster Management Center. Our colleagues from the Weather Service have done a sterling job. A lot of the inputs will be duplicated, so we will try not to spend too much time on duplication. Just to say, the outline of the presentation is on what is our mandate, some of the challenges that we face, because the disaster management works at three tiers of government, our policy and legislation, our framework, our institutional arrangements regarding the advisory forums that we have, and the Intergovernmental Committee on Climate Change, our own process in terms of assessment and risk reduction, and then the risk reduction management, our training and education responsibilities, and then the response and recovery, and then we'll conclude. The National Disaster Management Center currently resides in the Department of Cooperative Governance. Our primary objective is to promote an integrated and coordinated system of disaster management with special emphasis on prevention and mitigation by national and municipal organs of state, statutory functionaries, NGOs, and other relevant role players in communities. In addition, it also focuses on emergency preparedness, which is the common perception out there that is our primary job, although there's a huge amount of other functions that we also perform, which relates to the early warning, the rapid and effective response to disasters, and post-disaster recovery, which takes up most of the work that we do in a year. The NDMC, in terms of white paper application, there's a link between disaster risk reduction and climate change adaptation, and also making provision for the review of the Disaster Management Act to make sure that there is compliance in terms of disaster adaptation. The frequency of disaster incidents, as has been reported by the previous colleague, there's huge changes over the past few years, and the disasters have become quite major. And they are not only limited only to flooding, but they also relate to felt fires and droughts in some of the provinces. And in January 2011, the country, for the first time, had experienced a national flood disaster that affected 8 of the 9 provinces. The only province that wasn't affected by those floodings were the Western Cape. The major damages that we have to contend with when these disasters happen is primarily in the human settlements environment, schools, roads, and agriculture. In 2011, we had some major felt fires in the Western Cape, and in some parts of Limpopo in the northwest. The mandate of the NDMC is to improve the coordination across the spheres of government. In terms of the NDMC, the Act, the three spheres is at a national level, where we've got the National Disaster Management Center, we've got Provincial Disaster Management Center, and we've got District Disaster Management Centers, and then the districts do the coordination of all the municipal data management sector. And primarily it is to facilitate the mainstream of climate change, and we use the IDPs in terms of the development planning and programs to make sure that disaster management is taken up in the IDPs, and also to improve mechanisms on disaster risk reduction and management into the planning strategies of all three spheres of government. We have some challenges that we do face on a daily basis. The in-depth understanding of disaster management generally is the perception is there, if something has happened, there's a fire engine that's going to pitch up and clean up the mess afterwards. And the in-depth understanding of disaster management generally is about that. And in our mainstreaming processes, we want to integrate the whole process of climate change and the planning processes to make sure that we do know that we are subject to serious disasters, and how do we deal with those. The capacity to deal with this and the increased frequency and the intensity of the weather-related systems are not matched to each other. And then obviously that we do find that there is, in most destitute areas, disaster management is not a priority. And this, the political will at local government level is not always, does not always assist us in taking things forward. The Act and the framework sets out a comprehensive approach to disaster risk reduction, and identifies the roles and responsibilities of all the organs of states and institutions. As one of the honourable members had asked previously, that disaster management is everybody's business. We speak of sector departments. I've spoken about where disasters incur that relate to human resources, human settlements. The Department of Human Settlements plays an important role. The Department of Communication in terms of getting the information out where it has to be through the GCIS. Then there's the agriculture, transport. So all the sector departments do play an important role as far as disaster management is concerned. And then resilience and climate change related extreme events such as heat waves, floods, drought, storms, wildfires, storm surges will be an important focus for the approach of the risk reduction and management in South Africa. We have a disaster management framework that's been issued in terms of the Act, and the key performance areas are our institutional arrangements, risk assessment, risk reduction, and response and recovery. And then we've got some enablers that relates to information management communication, and one of our key drivers is education, training, public awareness, and research that we do, and then obviously the funding mechanism. The NNC will actively participate in the Intergovernmental Committee on Climate Change, and we do that, and we ensure that disaster risk management issues are adequately addressed and climate change policies and its implementation. And we'll also support the mainstreaming of disaster risk reduction initiatives by all other role players. The NNC will also provide guidance and advice on various sectorial adaptation responses to ensure that disaster risk reduction and management issues are addressed and included in adaptation strategies in the various sectors. We play quite an important role in assisting the Department of Environmental Affairs with the floods that happened. We spoke about KZN, but there was quite substantial damages that had taken place in the Kruger Park, and we were an integral part of assisting there. We've got an advisory forum, as I've indicated earlier on, that this is a forum where all the sector departments do participate in issues of disaster management, and it's a legislative structure, and it's a multi-stakeholder platform where issues of climate change adaptation and disaster risk reduction forms part of the agenda. We facilitate a coalition of action for disaster risk reduction, and the advisory forum has technical task teams that provide clear guidance across the spheres of governments for managing climate change risk related issues, and these are normally made up of the sector departments. For instance, the South African Weather Service and the Geosciences form part of a task team that makes sure that we can get sufficient information and tie on time and how it is packaged. These structures are duplicated in the various spheres of government and provide an ideal institutional platform to discuss issues on climate change and risk reduction. These advisory forums meet quarterly, and if and when it is really necessary, we do get them together. The other issue that we deal with is our regional structures. Extreme weather events often are cross borders. If there's a major flooding that does take place in Mozambique, it invariably does have an effect on KZN and Mpumalanga. So, and even if the rain does not fall, those rivers do come down, and it does create. So there's some challenges, and there is a regional wide approach to risk reduction and the management thereof. And we also seek to collaborate in central relations with our neighboring state and build regional capacity. In February, we were at the United Nations where we were dealing with disaster management issues, and there was, again, a huge emphasis on the SADC countries and how we deal with disaster management as a collaborative. We do vulnerability assessments in key sectors across the spheres of government, taking into consideration the effects of climate change. The vulnerability studies that were done in the late 90s compared to what we are dealing with now in the updating is quite significant, where the impact of climate change is becoming quite clear. And this will also inform our risk profile and risk reduction planning priorities. We put measures in place to strengthen our preparedness for response and to promote the development of disaster risk management plans across the spheres of government. As the colleague from the Weather Service had indicated, this is quite critical because preparedness does help us, because our primary objective is to make sure that we don't lose lives and that the people of the country are taken care of. And it's early responses and warnings that help. The one area is the most vulnerable is in the very rural areas and those communities. And what we have done of late is also engaged in the traditional leadership, who are also responsible for the allocation of land, to make sure that when the land allocation is done, that we do indicate what the flood lines are, so that when they do this, they can take that into consideration. Mechanisms and partnerships to mainstream disaster risk reduction and climate change, as I indicated, are part of the IDPs for all the spheres of government. We also continue advocating for risk reduction to be a priority and proactively build a knowledge base and our capacity to adapt to the inevitable impact of climate change, and importantly by enhancing early warning monitoring and disaster risk management systems. This needs to be reinforced by research, capacity development, technical development, as we've heard from the Weather Service, which is one of our co-departments that do help us in this process. The NDMC has strengthened its relationship with the Weather Service and especially with the geosciences. A week ago, there was a tremor that was in Swaziland. It was of a seismic nature. And we were in Mpumalanga at that point in time. And just because of the kind of media that these issues have had worldwide, there was quite a hype that had occurred in the southern parts of Mpumalanga. People were really worried because they felt the light tremors. And it's to make sure that people are properly informed and how to take this forward. And we also, as I indicated, have continuous bilateral discussions with the sector departments and to make sure that they also include the risk reduction from a disaster perspective in their own strategies and plans. The forecasting we've dealt with, we also, from a disaster management perspective, have quite extensive aerial support in terms of firefighting. Especially in the agriculture environment. And we also support the provinces and municipalities. At the moment, they are busy doing their winter awareness campaigns. They're going out to the communities, making that the fire breaks are in place and making sure that if there are fires that do occur, that they can be contained. The NDMC will strengthen its institutional and legal basis of risk reduction. We are currently reviewing the NDMC, the disaster management legislation, and it will be aligned with the climate change aspects and the linkages that we need to do for adaptation to make sure that the Act is aligned to that. And the resilience in terms of the climate-related extreme events. The training and education process is quite an important one from our perspective, and this we've got programs in the schools in the country, and we're really going out to the rural areas to make sure that the communities are understanding what it means when there is a warning that does come, where they need to go, and why there are these warnings. You know, it's sometimes very difficult for people that stay on the banks of a river to get them to move away, but to get them to understand that the impact of what it could be. So that's an ongoing process. And we do make use of the local communities to assist in this process. The effective planning, coordination, and integration of the adaptation processes and responses, and the early warning forecasting, as we've indicated, the NDMC will also foster closer collaboration with key partners, the Department of Weather Services, the Environmental Affairs, the Geosciences, and any of the other departments that do make sure, the Department of Agriculture that manage the fire services at this point in time. In conclusion, climate change impact and responses are cross-cutting in nature, and the NMC will work in collaboration with any other relevant stakeholder to mainstream climate change and disaster management planning and programs which are guided by the Climate Change Response White Paper, the Intergovernmental Committee on Climate Change. In December, there was the Climate Change Adaptation Charter for Local Government. It was adopted at COP17. There are a number of other issues. And then also, just to conclude, there's an Understanding Risk Forum, which is an international conference taking place from the 2nd to the 6th of July here in Cape Town. In partnership with the Global Facility on Disaster Risk Reduction and Recovery and the World Bank. And it's an open conference, and we would like to invite the members of this portfolio committee to, if they find their way over, we'll send the information through to the secretariat that they do attend, because there are some really good speakers that are going to be coming to South Africa, and people that are really passionate about climate change and risk reduction. Honourable Chair, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Any comments, questions? That gives you an overview of the Mr. Morgan.
Thanks very much. With regard to the provinces, has a disaster management centre, is it established in every single province? And are the disaster management plans completed for every single province, and how often do those plans have to be re-updated, taking into account any new learned experiences or recent events?
My problem is that I'm aware of your existence and all those things, but I have never in the last many years felt your impact. I don't see your notices or how you operate your work. Now, that's not a criticism, it's just a fact and statement. I'm trying to work out, obviously your main way of working is to talk to government, local government, and so on, to help them and do the things. But in terms of your, for the public, I mean, how do you communicate, how do you let people know that things are going to happen, or don't you do it and someone else does it? I'm trying to get the relationship between how we use the disaster management, and as we're going forward, it's going to get worse and worse. And, you know, it seems to me it shouldn't be a structure that one's not aware of. At this level where I am as a politician, I obviously don't have much workings with it, so I understand why I don't know about much about it. But I also then don't see how it impacts in my communities where I operate and so on. So just that kind of interrelationship with you as an institution and how you're going to play that role in a much more visible way. I'd like to hear some of your views on that. Any other comments, Ms. Manganya, Mr. Mateve, Ms. General?
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm interested in this one of the training that they say they have. I just want to like how many rurals or provinces have you reached already with this training?
Sorry, sir. My question is, in fact, I wanted to know as to whether do they have a mechanism in place to monitor disaster risk reduction and management in various municipalities? And also, if they have the mechanism in place to verify the authenticity of the information that they receive from those
need to have to be on standby. I thought I should just ask that question.
Tell me, just waiting for the minister.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions? Okay.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Just to start off, I was appointed in the Disaster Management Center in January. I don't come from a disaster background, and the questions that are asked amongst the honourable members were relevant questions that I asked when I started there. Coming from a military background, the basic aspects of disaster management and the Disaster Management Act as it was implemented in the department has been primarily a responsive type organization. When a disaster has happened, then you will phone the Disaster Management Center and then they will see how they put mechanisms in place. We've got good policies and it's now for the implementation. As I indicated, prior to me going over there, I didn't know much about the Disaster Management Center. As a matter of fact, I didn't even know that it existed. In terms of the provinces and if there are centers in all the provinces, there are centers in every single one of the 9 provinces. They're all at different levels of functionality. Some of the provinces have got where the departments of cooperative governance put quite a lot of emphasis on disaster management. They are well resourced. Other provinces are less well resourced, and it primarily relates, as I indicated, to the kind of resources that is allocated to them. The plans that are there, that if there's a requirement that they are updated on an annual basis, and there are processes and mechanisms in place to follow up whether these plans are in fact updated. The challenge that you do have, provinces that have got high occurrences of incidents which could be classified as a disaster, are more up to date than what you would find in a province that you hardly ever have any incidents that would relate to a specific disaster. In terms of the communications and the responsiveness is, and as the Honourable Chair indicated, currently the communication happens as the colleagues from the Weather Service have indicated. We do get the information, and we do work through the National Joint Operations Centre in Gauteng. And then there's a decision taken by the sector departments on how the information is disseminated. The issue of all the provinces and the municipalities that have been reached and the monitoring of risk reduction at the municipal level is the core competency of the provinces and the district municipalities that do this. There is a requirement that they do submit all these plans to the National Disaster Management Center annually. Obviously, that there are some of the provinces that really put a lot of effort into this, and it does happen, but there are other provinces that don't. I don't have the exact figures here with me, but it is an evolving process. And then just to indicate in terms of the benchmarking with other countries, we do form part of the United Nations disaster management, and there are invariably opportunities where we do send people to other countries to see what they are doing and how they're taking processes forward. Just to say to the honourable members and to the honourable chair that since January, the Minister for Cooperative Governance has really put a lot of effort into and a lot of emphasis on disaster management because it does affect us. And all the issues that we are raising are issues that are clearly defined in the Act. But we are only in a position now where we've got proper structures and processes in the Department of Cooperative Governance where we're actually putting these structures in place and putting these processes to work. We are now getting sufficiently trained and qualified people to come in. And we want to move away just from, as I indicated at the onset, the disaster management is not just about going to help people after the disasters happened. The risk reduction in the country has not been very good. In 1981, I was digging in mud in Lanesburg. I was physically part of that process while I was in the military. And the only monument that you got of that is a pole in the middle of Lanesburg when you arrive through there that says, if you see this line, that's where the mud was. But that pole in the middle is in the middle of the road in the middle of town, if that same occurrence has to happen again after 20 years, it will be a worse disaster, because now there are more people, there are more informal settlements, and there's just absolutely nothing that has happened over the past 30 years. So it's a mind shift, and as the Honourable Member had said, that our primary objective is to get disaster management on the map, and we are putting structures in place to make sure. So it has been a bit of a lull, and I say share your sentiments as far as that is concerned. Thank you.
Any comments, any further follow-ups, Mr. Matera?
I was then saying that every department, you don't have any mechanism to monitor the authenticity of the information provided to the municipalities.
I'm sorry, Honourable Chair, I don't hear well. I can hardly hear what the gentleman is saying.
I think he's saying that, are you saying you don't really then have a mechanism to verify the information that you receive from other institutions?
Honourable Chair, the information that we do get, we can verify, because we've got a GIS component and we do have people over there that do the verification of this information. So if we get the information, when we do get it, we do verify it, and we do engage with the provinces and the district municipalities on those. They currently, with the setting up of a lot of the disaster management centres, we are invited to go and assist and make sure the processes that they're putting in place are in line, and it is based primarily on the information that they send to us. We do an analysis, and then we are in a position to assist them.
But in your first response, you did say that it is the responsibility of the district municipalities to make sure that they verify whatever is happening within their district. So it was as if you were the national government. You just receive everything as it is. You don't analyze it. You don't do anything about it. That to death it is. So that's why I made this follow-up. So I was a bit surprised to say, how can you, as a national department, receive information and you don't analyze it to make sure that this is correct, and you made some follow-ups to make sure that the what you are going to do will in fact impact on what you have received.
Honourable Chair, as I indicated at the onset, there's three spheres of government. We've got the National Disaster Management Centre, you've got Provincial Disaster Management Centres, you've got your District Disaster Management Centres, and then you've got Disaster Management Centres in all the municipalities. And there's a local a logical flow that comes through to the NDMC. There's no documents that come, or no disaster management plans that will come to the NDMC that have not gone through the district, that have not gone through the province. But when they do come to us, there is a formal process of analysis, and it flows through the same process to go back to the districts and to the municipalities. And where we there is an opportunity, and where we can, we do go and assist them. Formally, our minister has been hammering quite heavily on this concept of cooperative governance. And although the Act says that we've got no jurisdiction to do it, it is the districts and the provincial PDMCs that have to do this work. We do get actively involved and we do participate. So there is, and the primarily this process has started from the middle of last year, when the disaster management has really started building an organization, and as we're going ahead, this probably will develop much better and much, and we're also having a look to change the Act, because the Act is very limiting in what certain spheres of governance can do, and to impose is not always that easy. So in turn, there is a revision of the Act so that we can make sure that it's more an inclusive process and a process of cooperative governance to assist.
Thanks very much for those answers you dealt with in your initial presentation. master disaster management, particularly under the predictions of climate change, is obviously something that is going to have to be appropriately funded. Now, I'm not going to ask the question, where should the money come from? We can ask Treasury that. But what I am interested in is, does your sense of concern itself with, for example, guidelines on what a district municipality or a municipality, or for that matter, a province should be annually budgeting for the purposes of responding to disaster management? And as I said, I accept that the cases would be very different in different municipalities, but there are, what I'm asking is there some kind of benchmarking where you, in fact, take an interest in allocations and budgets and provide necessary advice on those kinds of things? The second thing is, with regards to responding to disasters, to what extent is, let's just keep it at a sort of national government level, to what extent does the system as it stands with regards to Treasury regulations and the allocations across various departments, to what extent does that actually lend itself to efficient and effective response to disasters? And what I mean here, how timeous is it? And do you have any thoughts on that and any challenges that may need to be addressed in order to make allocations happen more quickly?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. It's the response in terms of the advice on funding. In our framework, it does make provision, or it does give advice on certain percentages of the budget that should be put aside for disaster relief as per se. Obviously, the a lot of the provinces and even the municipalities are constantly raise the issue of this being an unfunded type of a mandate, which is quite difficult. And as you did indicate that in the more affluent areas, the disaster type funding that would come is much better and than it would be in a real rural municipality where the income base is very, very small. So it does create. And in terms of response, I think from a government perspective that in terms of responses where there are major disasters, we've never had in the past a position where there was not sufficient funding made available from a contingency reserve. It's not something that you can budget for, but there are processes in terms of the Treasury. There's immediate relief funding. The funding is broken up into two aspects. You've got immediate relief funding, and then you've got post-reconstruction funding that is made available. Immediate relief funding is when, obviously, the municipalities and the districts and the provinces have exhausted all their own funding, disaster management funding. They would approach the national government and comply with a certain amount of issues. Disasters have to be declared at a provincial level by way of an example. And then there is immediate relief funding that will be made available to assist, for instance, with water purification systems and where the road is completely gone and access. So there is immediate relief funding. And then obviously there's post-reconstruction funding where bridges have been washed away and you may do and to reconstruct and build. There are processes, but it's subject to verification. And then that funding will be made available through the adjustments appropriation process with the National Treasury, where they can then assist as far as that is concerned. And invariably that will come from a contingency reserve. I hope I've answered the question.
Yeah. Okay, thanks a lot. I want to see the Disaster Management Center. I want you to affect my life. Not when there's a disaster, but before there's a disaster. I think you must become like sores. How long have I been here now? We've been struggling for a long time for them to get warnings on the TV. They've now come to tell us there's going to be warnings. Now I'm very excited by that. disasters management center that's really moving and operating, and I'm very happy to, I see you starting to come to grips with it. It has to become something real, tangible. So we hope that'll happen. So thank you very much. Okay, so I think it's been good hearings today. There's been some good stuff that's come out to understand and at least see what is in place for us as we move forward, the foundations. So, Ms. Beaumont's not here, so you fellows, there's two things that comes out of today we need done. Firstly, this document must be updated in the different ways we've seen. Firstly, those mechanisms that you spoke about on the M&E. Secondly, there's the CDM, carbon sequestration, those issues are not touched upon. At least there has to be what we're doing with. And when you start giving input, it's clear we are doing stuff. Then the issues of the different funds and how we're going to deal with that and approach them. But now, since we spoke, it worries me. You see, this input on the oceans, these people are going to cause nightmares for us, these oceans people, because of the things they said here. I mean, that red is going to haunt me. When I look at the sea, I'm now going to get haunted by it. But you know what is not being said here? Is if that is happening to the water south of us, then there is clearly a climate change very close to us is going to impact very strongly on us. Now, what are we saying in our climate change about that? I mean, you know, we're not dealing with that. I mean, in the input that we got today, this oceans issue is not dealt with. It may be dealt with, subsumed in something else that we can't see. So, this input, plus these two inputs that are dealing with warning systems and disasters and that also has to be integrated in here. So it becomes part of the implementation plan. I mean, the department was wise enough to bring those three. I didn't ask it. They brought it to say, you have to hear these three inputs. So we've now heard it, but it's not part of this. Okay. So we must make sure that those three areas are also integrated here. And then the second issue is, once we've updated this document, then from this we need to draft that implementation plan. So those are the two tasks, okay? You guys have got it, Becca. Everyone happy with that in the committee? Any else the committee wants to raise before we, on these matters? No. Now, tomorrow we'll start at 9:30. I know some of us have to go to a rules committee meeting first, but we'll start at 9:30. Start with the department giving us an overview of adaptation, and then we'll get into adaptation of the different departments, okay? Let me just say on the programming, there was a few things I wanted to raise. Next week is Ashir Mesh in Parliament.